can't believe it.
That Gerald is presenting the quarterly budget report with finger puppets?
Look, here comes a 1.7% decrease in fixed overhead. Hello, everybody.
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
Who are you? The projected increase in organic Q3 revenue. Hooray!
Believe it, Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Let's consider the secret life of the innermost nesting doll. Living most of her life in the dark, inside the other nesting dolls, she has plenty of time to think, if she could. Sadly, she has no brain. However, when an innermost nesting doll hears that Geico not only saves people money, but also has been providing great service for over 75 years, she thinks it's obvious you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Pity the innermost nesting doll and her lot in life.
Ladies and gentlemen, entering the podcast ring at this time, with a combined weight of 860 pounds, are the new tag team champions, the Super Size Guys. First, representing This Week in Geek, and hailing from parts unknown, he is Mike, the Birdman, Dodd.
Somebody stop the damn man!
And his podcasting partner, representing the GeekCast Radio Network, and hailing from the outer reaches of your mind, he is TFG1 Mike Blanchard. These two podcasting giants have joined forces in the World Podcasting Federation. This is Mayhem Mikes. And now,
let's consider the secret life of the innermost nesting doll. Living most of her life in the dark, inside the other nesting dolls, she has plenty of time to think, if she could. Sadly, she has no brain. However, when an innermost nesting doll hears that Geico not only saves people money, but also has been providing great service for over 75 years, she thinks it's obvious you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Pity the innermost nesting doll and her lot in life.
Let's get ready to podcast!
Hello and welcome to Mayhem Mikes. This is episode 8. This is, we're crashing through the fast lane, people, and heading straight to WrestleMania, because, oh my god, was that shit boring. I am, of course, TFG and Mike. Joining me is Mike the Birdman Dodd. Hello.
I am in the carpool lane!
Yeah, exactly. And our special guest referee, Ryan the Uneven Flow Markley. Hello.
You sound as excited as the fans watching a Reigns victory.
I pretty much sound as exciting as you do almost every time you talk. It's like,
Yeah, but in my case, it's the sound of my voice, and I can't do anything about it.
I know, I know. So, Fastlane happened.
Yeah, it was a thing. That's about the best thing you can say about it.
The best part about it was, like, every 5 seconds the title card come up and we got to see Eva Marie. That's probably the best thing about it.
You know what? I would argue the first three matches were good. I liked Kevin Owens and Dolph Ziggler. I liked Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch. Although, Tamina needs to leave in a hurry. And I don't know why they put the U.S. Championship on the pre-show.
Because it doesn't matter anymore. Because Cena is not there.
But R-Truth, fucking... Who was he fighting again? Curtis Axel. What a waste of a slot.
Yeah, I mean, the real reason is they just want more people to tune into the pre-show. I mean...
Yeah, which is fair, but it just seemed like just such an asinine thing.
It's also unfortunate because it was one of the better matches of the night. It was still really... It was a really good match. I'd argue it was an above-average pay-per-view. I didn't think it was great, but I didn't think it was terrible. Although a lot of that's just because of the wrestlers putting on a really good show. And I am including the Del Rio and Kalisto in that.
Well, just looking at the main thing here, like Mike said, we had Sasha and Becky versus Naomi and Tamina. We had Kevin Owens and Ziggler. We had Ryback, the Big Slow, versus Demon Kane and the Wyatt family.
Yeah, that match sucked.
My god, that's what pissed me off.
Okay, well, we had Charlotte versus Brie Bella, we had AJ Styles and Chris Jericho, the League of Nations, Curtis Axel. So basically, starting from the Divas Championship match to the end of the pay-per-view, every other match sucked.
I'd argue the main event match was good. I just don't like the outcome, obviously, but the match itself was good.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, okay, starting with Styles and Jericho, that match was good. Then you go to the League of Nations versus the New Day on the Cutting Edge Peep Show.
Yeah, that segment was just 5 minutes too long. If they cut
that was the problem. Yeah. Fine. Well, it was too long, and the League of Nations has a bit of a problem in that they can't talk.
Yeah, pretty much.
But say the only one on that mic that's even remotely entertaining is Barrett.
Yeah, who they don't give the mic to. Yeah, who they never give the mic to because he's on his way out. I mean, you know,
isn't sucks too.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll be gone by June. He's not going to resign.
Yeah, he's leaving.
That sucks.
But then again, he hasn't been really good since he was rebranded as King Barrett. Bad News Barrett was amazing.
Yeah, and then got held back by injuries, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think he screwed up his shoulder or something.
Yeah, and just a string of them, though. It wasn't just that. It was,
if you really think about it, he pretty much, outside of people like CM Punk and stuff, Barrett pretty much put WWE back on the map a little bit when he debuted with the Nexus, when the original Nexus group, because he was the leader of that group.
The thing that got my attention with Barrett, it's because a friend of mine would always post a meme on Twitter, and it's him standing at his podium, "I'm afraid I've got some bad news."
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the few times I can remember outside of the John Cena memes and the Yes Chants, where a WWE thing has kind of crossed into the kind of mainstream again. I don't know. Like, it became relevant before I got into wrestling again. I'm thinking, man, that's kind of an accomplishment. I really think so. But, it's really unfortunate that WWE is going to lose him. I mean, I don't even think he's going to stick around as a trainer. I think he's just like, yeah, guys, I'm done. I'm good. Thanks.
Like I said last time when we talked about the Owens-Ambrose match, anytime Owens fights anybody worth anything, like Ambrose or Ziggler, I just love watching those guys work.
My God, Owens elevates anybody he's with.
Yeah, I'm not as huge. I'm kind of sick of Ziggler because it feels like he just puts on the same match each time. He has very little chance of winning. Now, that part's not really his fault, but I mean, they need to do something with his character.
He doesn't have a lot of variety, maybe?
They just need to do something with his character, because it's just he's just kind of empty right now.
They tried doing something with his character with the whole
Jean Jacket?
They tried giving him a storyline, and it didn't work, because it was the whole love triangle.
That was a terrible story line. Stupid. I mean,
that was a terrible storyline.
I mean, I love Ziggler, too. I mean, he's one of my favorite guys to watch perform, but Ryan's right, he does put on the same match all the time. I think he's a great worker, but doesn't have a lot of variety. And he's never going to get out of the mid card.
Well, that's the issue, is in his defense, does he have a lot of reason to? I mean, and the other issue is just wear and tear. He's wrestled 380 matches in the last few years.
Mm.
That's 60 more than the number two worker. Actually, not 60, it's 55.
His joints must be made of spaghetti.
Yeah, because the next one, by the way, down the list is Sheamus at 325. That's way too many. Like, that's too much. 325 is a lot.
And that's counting non-televised stuff, right?
Yeah, that's house shows and everything else, yeah.
Yeah, but that's...
How many house shows? Because I don't
every weekend
pay attention to what's on TV, but how many house shows per year does WWE do?
Pretty much every weekend.
Yeah, pretty much every weekend, and then even then, sometimes through the week as well.
Yeah, because sometimes you'll get the odd, like, Friday night show, but you'll always get something on Saturday and Sunday.
And they split the brand, too. I mean, there's just so much wrestling. That's the other thing that I think's hurt WWE's saturation, and it's hurt them in two ways. It's literally hurt them because guys are getting injured and can't wrestle. And it hurts them because, again, saturation. Like, it's out there. Their guys are out there every single night, seemingly.
Mm-hmm. So the main pay-per-view for Fastlane kicked off with the tag team stuff with Sasha, Becky versus Tamina, Naomi. Why didn't they make this a fatal four-way match?
No, that might have been more interesting to watch, actually.
Too much of a cluster fuck, basically. I mean, like, hearing guys talk about doing stuff like the three-way matches, that kind of thing, it's hard to get in your offense, or it's hard for guys to shine in that. You basically have to bury somebody. Now, if you have the four, you can have two teams of two wrestling, but people aren't necessarily watching one, basically, or necessarily watching the one WWE wants them watching. So I think that's part of it. The other issue is, to be blunt, they can protect somebody like Tamina, who's not particularly skilled yet.
See, that's, you know, that's to Mike's point, honestly. You know, they could have this fatal four-way match, and they could bury somebody out of the four of them. Bury Tamina. She can't do shit.
Well, I think part of the
with Tamina and Naomi, they're a tag team of just because. They have nothing going for either of them.
This match was just because. I mean, it was assembled at the last minute to give Brie Bella one last sort of hurrah before she heads off into the sunset. I mean, that's all this was. It was something to show off Sasha Banks a little bit more, because she's been pretty underused since the quote-unquote revolution. And it was an opportunity to keep Becky Lynch in the spotlight as well, too. I mean, there was no way Tamina and Naomi were going to win this match.
No. But the thing is, I think they're wasting Naomi, because she is she's a good talent. She's a great worker.
She is talent. When they had her kind of snap, and this is a while ago now, and, you know, go nuts because, you know, she wasn't getting the opportunity, that kind of thing, she was really good for a while.
Yeah, she has talent. She just kind of, yeah, Tamina's been nothing but, she's a goon, and not even a particularly good goon.
No, they have.
And she can't talk for shit.
Yeah, NXT has more talented, larger, like, really strong women in it than Tamina, so I don't know, maybe send her back down for a little more time or to...
I'm also even kind of surprised she's still in WWE because of the bullshit with her dad. You'd think they maybe want to distance themselves.
Yeah,
that's why they discard Tamina as opposed to Tamina Snuka.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe we can, while we're on this and we're on sort of the Divas, oh god, I hate that. Why don't they just call it the friggin' women's division again and call it the women's title? It's really degrading that it's
Divas. Because it sounds better on a t-shirt. It's marketing.
Yeah, one thing I totally forgot about in one of our previous shows, which was the Royal Rumble, I totally had forgotten about it, and that was Ric Flair and his literally sexual assault Becky Lynch. What the hell was that? And it's funny because, like, I sent it to you guys when I was watching and then totally forgot when we recorded it, which reminds me, like, Brad Lincoln, if you're listening, A, please comment way more. You're really good. I really like, yes. I really like reading your comments. And I'm 100%. Why don't we get decent comments like that on your shows, for Christ's sake?
Because a lot of them respond to me on Facebook and Twitter directly.
Yeah, because a lot of them... anyway. Sorry. So anyway. No, and he pointed it out too, and I totally forgot about that, which stinks. Anyway.
All right, so Sasha and Becky versus Tamina and Naomi. I know they're going to eventually put Sasha and Becky at odds with each other, but I like them as a tag team. I think they worked fairly well as a tag team.
Yeah, but as it is right now, unfortunately, there's not enough room for any, like, female tag teams. True. They're still having a hard time devoting... They're devoting more time to it than they used to, and it's getting better, but they still have a long way to go.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that sucks, too, because, like I said, I have a very vested interest in the Divas division, because I watch Total Divas. I like these people, genuinely. But... It sucks to see, like I said, people underused, buried, and...
I just want to see talents when I watch this stuff. And Lynch, Banks in particular, like, Sasha Banks is an absolute star in the making.
Well, she carries herself in such a way, she has that confidence.
And she's done a good job with her character and everything else as the boss. She's somebody who, she's going to be on par with some of the top men if they... continue to sort of work her correctly and give her some people to fight against, which they've done a good job, because I find Charlotte, I just wish they'd get Rick away from her, because he overshadows her, and he's not really needed. Charlotte's doing a good enough job on her own. She's improved leaps and bounds since she started.
But it seems to me, and this I'm probably isolated in this opinion, she's just become really friggin' irritating the last 2 months to me. Like, I'm not even enjoying watching her work anymore. And maybe that's just the quality of the opponent she's getting or how she's told to perform. But
it depends on who it is. I thought her matches and stuff with Becky were really good.
We'll get to her
match later on this one.
Yeah, that one, like, I don't know, but yeah, we'll like get to that. But I guess before we move on to the next one, I really want Naomi to get another shot again, because when you see her on Total Divas, this was last year when she more or less, she quote unquote left the show to do more stuff with the Usos, I guess. You could see she was really, really frustrated, and it's really not fair. Like, just to see her, like I said, Barry, because there's a genuine talent there. There's a real drive to win, to perform. And she's just, there's this gimmick, and it makes me so mad. I went on a Twitter rampage on this. I'm like, I will sacrifice baby goats or whatever you need me to do. Never heard Tamina go, Unity! I want to stab her in the throat, broken glass. God, whoever writes that needs to be punched in the nuts and sent to Iraq or something.
It's kind of like everything they write for the. It's kind of like how everything, all the crap they write for the Boo Day. Oh God.
Yeah, you're wrong about that. But anyway.
You're totally wrong on that one, dude.
Yeah, sorry.
Those guys suck. I'm sorry, they do.
Give me three reasons why they suck.
Unicorns is one.
Okay, one thing. It's like, listen.
Okay, hang on. I'm talking to two My Little Pony fans, and you're going to complain about unicorns?
Grown men should not be running around with unicorns on their fucking heads.
Oh boy. Wow. Anyway, you two are like...
Just because I read the comics does not mean...
You two might be the worst people to be saying that.
Just because I have read the comics does not mean I'm going to go running around with a fucking unicorn on the top of my head.
Sorry, what?
That has to do with them sucking.
Sorry, what? Are you done your rewatch of Gem, by the way?
Hey.
We can do this all day, but wow. Listen, I'm not saying I'm a fan of that bit of what they do, but
how to tap into something, means that's drawing a new audience.
That's as bad a reason to dislike them as if they were, say, ordered to hit John Cena with a chair by their bosses.
I want to see them actually go through something with their storyline. Like, instead of putting them up against whoever the hell they have them up against, put them up against the Wyatt family and just have them go mouth to mouth on the mic with each other.
See, that's fair. not a bad idea, because their storyline does need to evolve.
Yeah, and that's a fair complaint, too, because they haven't had anyone to... All right, maybe we should talk about them when we get to the segment.
Okay, yeah. So you have until then to think of three reasons why they suck.
No, but anyway, Ziggler v. Owens.
Yeah, I loved it. I know Ziggler's kind of, you know, one note, and he's kind
of... Yeah, and I'm not trying to say he's bad. It's just his matches are starting to sort of really kind of meld together. Now, I guess part of that, too, is because they keep giving him the same opponents. How many times has he fought Owens in the last couple months? It's just constant. And then tonight, he beat, you know, The Miz in a really quick match. Like, yip-de-doo. And it had absolutely no build-up. They had a quick segment on the pre-show a week ago, and now suddenly they get this super quick match where he beats The Miz. Like, I guess that's the problem, is how are we supposed to care about him when he's, you know, never given anything to do or booked or anything? And by the way, Owens, I love Owens, but he kind of has to tone down being so entertaining if he's going to be a heel. Because when he goes out there and he says stuff like, your hometown likes me better than you, stuff like Chinlock City all night long. He's entertaining, and I love it. But on the other hand, it's hard, makes it hard to boo the guy because he's funny.
Well, see, he's one of those entertaining heels. He's a heel that you love to love, not a heel that you love to hate.
Yeah, but
that's kind of the point, isn't it?
He's best when he's the bad heel, especially in NXT, when they let him injure guys, and it looks like they're getting back to that. I mean, they let him beat the Big Show. I really like, by the way, the finish in this, that Owens is finally able to, or at least in this case, was able to kind of do the pop-up powerbomb out of nowhere, which was nice. Like, he did it from a quick short arm, and just... It's good if you can not anticipate it, because that's been one of the problems with his finisher, is it takes too long to set up. And the worst is when he fights Dean Ambrose, because Ambrose has that stupid bounce off the rope.
God, they way that
he does that. He does 18 times a match. And so every time Owens goes for his finisher, he ends up eating that. It's like when people used to try to powerbomb Kidman in WCW. You'd sit there going, no, don't do that. He always gives the other guy a facebuster. Don't even try it. And then they had guys who never, ever did a powerbomb would suddenly try it in a match against him. You'd get, like, Hogan set up for a powerbomb. My favorite ever was Raven setting up for a powerbomb. Guy who's never done one in his career. Although he can, but, I mean, never done it. Suddenly decides to try it against the one guy who's got a reversal for it.
So then we've got... Ryback, the Big Slow, and Demon Kane versus the Wyatt family.
This is where I checked out.
This was pointless. What was the point of having... By the way, Owens won the last match and won the title, or keeps the title.
Yeah, keeps the title.
Anyway, what was the point of having Kane, the Big Show, and Ryback win this? Three guys who were probably not going to be at WrestleMania, and you continue burying the Wyatts.
I mean, okay, but again, it comes to a question that we've been asking for the last three or four of these episodes that we've done. What or who can you put up against the Wyatts that would be a threat to them? It's the same thing with the New Day. You know, give the New Day a challenge. Give the Wyatts a challenge, like somebody,
yeah, but the problem with the problem with what you're saying is the Wyatts lose everything. Like, I know you're trying to say that they're supposed... The problem is they're supposed to be imposing, and they're not. Like, losing
they're
to three guys...
They're kind of a joke now.
Yeah, losing to three guys who have absolutely no plans or aspirations to be really anything. And, you know, I'm not trying to knock Ryback, right. Big Show, and Kane, but these are three guys who are not going to be at WrestleMania, presumably.
Well, two out of the three, I mean, are essentially WWE, WWF veterans. I mean, Ryback has only been around for a few years. At least to me, he's only been around for a few years. But Big Show and Kane have been around for decades.
But Big Show and Kane are only still there to put over new talent. So what's the point of having them beat new talent? It doesn't do them any good. And even worse than this, they would rematch the next night and... The Wyatt family still didn't look good. I mean, Ryback, like, walks out on them to help win. Like, it was pointless.
See, that's what I'm saying. They, if they're going to do the monster card, if they're going to have the Wyatt family be a monster thing, if they're going to have Rusev be a monster thing, you need other monsters. Just like the tag division, you need actual good tag teams. And
yeah, eventually, but my issue is that they're not building up as monsters. How is losing to everybody making the monster? Same with Rusev. Yeah,
and
they
that's
should.
The... Yeah. I was about to say, one of the things that's holding the Wyatts back is, like I said, we don't take them as credible threats anymore. They're not being written good. Like, half the time, as much as I love Bray Wyatt on the mic, now it's just rambling incoherency.
Well, that's because we talked about it before. They hand him the mic and say, hey, take up five minutes of our show.
Yeah.
And that's not really his fault. And then, I don't know. I still feel like their biggest problem is one of the WWE's biggest problems, and that is wins and losses don't matter anymore to them. They matter to us, though. Like, I remember that Sheamus hadn't won a match in about a year, and then suddenly he cashes in and wins the title.
WWE Hall of Famer, the Rated R,
it's bad writing. I mean, you can't have the WWE champion lose 18 of 20 televised matches and then try to make it seem like he's a credible threat.
Yeah.
And that's another thing they did. Like, there are no monster heels anymore. There's nobody who is unbeatable.
Seth used to be the closest thing they had for a while.
Yeah.
And then they clowned him out.
But look how hot he was for a while. Like, yeah. His match at WrestleMania when he came out in the tank, that was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Unfortunately, he got struck down by the Cena curse, which is anytime there's a monster, Cena for some reason has to beat him, and then they become a jobber.
Yeah, because they never give up.
It's sadly the rule. The only one that's been kind of immune, at least a little bit, is Owens is slowly climbing the roster again. But he's still down there. Anyway, yeah, this match was a wash. There's no reason for the Wyatts to lose this. At least if they win, it advances them somewhat. Mm-hmm. Like,
I mean, they could have used this match to push that big fucker, Braun Strowman. Well, they really want to put him over.
The other issue is they could have done this as a reason that they get better. Like, Bray wasn't in this match. Maybe after this on Raw, he berates them and says, how'd we lose to these three losers? Or something like that. Too bad they didn't. Like, that's not what they did. So it had no reason for existing.
Yep.
Speaking of no reason for existing, they followed this up with a Roman Reigns interview. Yay!
There was one thing I did on Twitter. I took a picture of JoJo interviewing Reigns, and there's just three seconds of Reigns, he's talking to JoJo, and it was the most defeated look I've ever seen on a person's face in my life. It's sort of like, why does nobody like me?
Oh,
and
we'll
he's trying to sell the believe that thing, and it's so not convincing.
Oh, we'll get to that later on, but I mean, anyway, we're mostly talking about matches.
And we talked about JoJo last time. I mean, she's doing pretty good for the interview. It's nice to see that, because I think I mentioned this last time, she originally was supposed to be in the Divas division.
Yeah, I generally like her backstage, actually.
Yeah, but having her backstage actually works. Speaking of Divas or women's whatever, I got Charlotte versus Brie. So are the Bellas, are both of them eventually just going to go away at this point? I mean, are they both leaving?
As of today, Monday the 29th, Nikki was posing on Twitter without her neck brace on, and she went to the Oscars. I think, yeah, it was either her or was it Brie. Either way, her recovery's going really well. You'll see her back sooner than you might think, I'm going to imagine. But yeah, Brie's, as Ryan said, going to walk off into the sunset later on this year, probably during SummerSlam. That's my guess.
I just don't know if Nikki gets pushed the way she used to again either, especially with a much deeper division.
Because now it's not just tits and ass. You actually have to fight.
Yeah.
Because when you put Nikki up against someone like a Charlotte or a Becky or a Sasha, they are better athletes. Nikki may be stronger physically, maybe. Yeah.
She's
not a performer like that.
I'd argue Brie was actually fairly good in this match. The issue is she doesn't do little things well. An example of that is for a good chunk of the match, she was selling an injured leg. And then suddenly it's time for her to do the yes kicks. And she decides like, hey, my leg's fine. And then as soon as it's over, she's like, oh yeah, it's hurt. And then she like goes back to rolling around. That's also partly WWE's fault because they give everybody a list of moves they want them to do in each match nowadays, and they have to hit them. So, but yeah,
So then we get to the exciting part of the pay-per-view: AJ Styles versus Chris Jericho.
I
still laugh at that stupid meme. I have it on my phone, and I showed it to everybody at work, and they think it's hilarious. For people who don't know, Mike sent a. It's a picture of Abraham Simpson with the creator of Itchy and Scratchy from The Simpsons. And it has the creator of Itchy and Scratchy going, hey, AJ Styles, here's your opponent, Chris Jericho, in reference to Abe Simpson. which, yeah, that was pretty funny. Thank you, but it's funny.
I mean, this match with these two guys, every time I see them work now at this point, I'm thinking, hey, this is like old school 1998 WWF.
It is. It's much. It's sort of a slower, more deliberate style, and they sell. One of the things that was really great in that match was Chris Jericho's facial expressions. I thought he did an amazing job of making it seem like, oh no, this could be my last match or something. Like, he really wanted to beat AJ Styles. Yeah. And that's something that this whole feud, by the way, has been great, because I said wins and losses don't matter in WWE, but these two have been pointing it out constantly, like who won the last match between them. And it's been nice, because that's how it should be. Like, if we're to believe that that wrestling's not completely fake, shouldn't the people who win be at the top?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's one of the problems I feel like they have, that we're supposed to believe that, you know, this is a real competition, yet if you win five matches, it means absolutely nothing. You're still, you know, fighting, you know, the social outcasts on
main event. And not even when they set up something like a number one contenders match shit. None of that even makes any sense, especially with Reigns. Now, I know we all hate Reigns around here for the most part, but when they were setting him up to be number one contender for whatever the hell it was, you know, it's like, oh, hey, yeah, you're the number one contender. And then you get to that match, like, oh, no, we're going to now do this, 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 and this, and this, and you're no longer the... And it's like, none of that shit matters anymore.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we're going to have a five-way finger whatever the hell, and everybody's going to do a free-for-all, or we're going to have a lumberjack match.
That, sentence.
Yeah, anyway. It just... Oh, God. WWE.
Anyway, this was a good match. I mean, Jericho...
Yeah, no, absolutely it was. I absolutely loved it.
The only things that kind of bugged me...
I'm going to go against the grain here. I didn't like it as much as I should then. Ryan told me to go back and rewatch it again. Because I'm not used to the old style of wrestling. I'm only now watching the Attitude Era stuff, where it's more slower, it's more deliberate. And I think that's why I didn't like this. Because I came in as a fan in 2014. Quick.
My thing with the quick style is, A, it doesn't give the audience time to react, and B, it tends to diminish all of the moves. Like, when you get up from being, you know, DDT'd, suddenly a DDT doesn't hurt all that much. Mm. And, I don't know, that's another one of the issues they have.
It also depends on who's wrestling. It really does, whether you're using quick or slow.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you could get Dean Ambrose in with somebody, and Dean has a somewhat fast-paced style, regardless if you hate his rope trick or not. You know, and then you get somebody like, even Ryback or, you know, I don't want to necessarily say the Big Show, because let's face it, the Big Show is getting up there in age.
But I think that's the other issue, too, is you've got to work smart. And I love Daniel Bryan, and we'll get to him in a bit. And what happened with him between, you know, our recordings. But as much as I love him, his style is not conducive to being able to wrestle a long time. Like, the old Attitude Era, there's a reason guys like Austin and others could go through, you know, neck surgeries and keep going. Mm-hmm. And part of that was a much slower, deliberate style where you protect both yourself and your opponent. When you wrestle quick, there's a much higher chance of stuff going wrong.
And that's the craziest thing. You know, we've all seen Tough Enough and all these other wrestling reality shows that they've had over the years. And every time you had a Stone Cold or an Al Snow or, hell, even though he's crazy now, a Taz in there, they always would preach about protecting your opponent, you know, protecting both the opponents and whatever else. And with the fast-paced style, it's like they're not even doing that anymore.
Yeah, I mean, watch NXT for examples of it, where there's an awful lot of selling. Even guys who are in amazing shape, like a Finn Balor, actually pretty much everybody in NXT is in really good shape. But it's all about sort of, there's a theatrical element to wrestling, and the quick style sometimes makes it really hard to do that. And it's weird, because AJ Styles, he's probably in his prime, and then you get Chris Jericho, who's you know, much as I hate to say it, not in his prime.
A little bit past his prime. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he legitimately got gassed at points in that match trying to keep up with AJ. But having said that, you know, it still was a really good match. And I think Jericho is at the point where he's wrestling smart enough. Like, he's been around enough. He can still put on really good matches, and he can find ways usually to keep up with these guys and still, you know, by making it look good and doing other things other than trying to run around the ring like a maniac.
This match made me miss what a lot of the matches don't do nowadays, regardless of a feud or a storyline. At the end of this match, they shook each other's hand. You know,
yeah.
I think that's just a sign of mutual respect for each other's workability in the ring, I think personally is what it is.
Yeah.
But
the inevitable build for this is Jericho's going to turn on Styles. Because, I mean, Jericho's the better heel. And to be blunt, there's no future in Chris Jericho anymore, unfortunately. Like, he can go out there and have good matches, but he's not going to be the top guy or anything anymore.
Yeah, he's not going to get a U.S. title or an intercontinental title or even the big title anymore.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see where WWE thinks the limit is for AJ Styles. He's a guy that's talented enough. He's been number one in a lot of different promotions over the years. And yeah, they're not WWE, but you know what? He still had to be that the guy who went out every night and had to perform every night. And there's something to be said for that. Like, that's not easy, and not everybody can do it. That's one of the reasons NXT is around, is to see if guys can do stuff like that.
And to cap the night off, we have Roman, Dean, and Brock. Because let's face it, League of Nations versus Boudet or whatever else, that's boring. And then Curtis Axel and R-Truth, that was just stupid.
There was no reason for that to be on the show at all.
I'm convinced that match was written when they realized, oh, guys, we are under time. Shit.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
And screamed of it being desperate.
There's another school of thought. There's been a couple places, and, you know, reasonably educated people have suggested one of the reasons for it, and one of the reasons for the other segment running long, was they wanted the crowd excited to see Roman.
Oh.
Sadly, I'm not joking. Remember, they've been trying everything, and now we get into what you mentioned earlier. Roman just looks frustrated, and I'm not talking about his character. I mean, the human being, and he's frustrated with this whole, we're going to push you to the moon all the time, even though it's not working. And I think, you know, he's not a dumb man. He's intelligent. He's articulate. He seems like a bright kid. He knows this isn't working, and you can see it on him. And I think he's just getting frustrated. I don't blame him. And by the way, the easy solution here is, why the hell haven't they turned him heel?
Why the hell haven't they turned him heel, and why the hell haven't they pushed Dean more?
Well, this is...
same reason Vince didn't want to push Daniel Bryan for a long time. Roman has the look, Dean doesn't.
Yeah, well, he has the look that they want, and that's the issue. The problem is, he's not who the fans want. And I will say this, if this is building to something, like Mike and I talked about this, you know, what, like a week or so ago, to me, the perfect scenario is Roman wins at WrestleMania. The Rock, by the way, spoiler alert, Roman wins this three-way. The Rock comes out to congratulate him, and they celebrate for a bit, and then Roman spears The Rock. And then he picks up the mic, and he says, I'm sick of being booed. I'm sick of people like you, Rock, and Dean, and Seth, et cetera, et cetera. I'm sick of everybody trying to steal my spotlight. And then, bam, you have instant, like, absolute hatred for the guy. Like, I think it would be perfect. And not only that, but you have feuds for, like, the next year all of a sudden. Because then you just have him feud with Dean Ambrose. That's an obvious one. You have him feud with a returning Seth Rollins, who's going to be a face. You have him feud with returning John Cena. Like,
Wait, they're turning Seth face? Seriously?
No, but I think when he comes back, he's going to be one, because the fans are going to cheer him because he basically saved them from Roman.
Oh, okay.
Like, I'm not remember when he left, they gave him the giant ovation, thank you, Seth, yeah, chance. Like, I expect when he comes back, people are going to be like, you know, save us from Roman.
And see, the whole thing with Roman versus Dean and the whole, oh, we're brothers, we're best friends, blah, 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 blah. I like seeing those guys fight each other. Like, I never thought I would ever think of, like, when I first started watching, you know, full time again for WWE, and once the Shield was introduced, I was like, okay, these guys are all right together. I don't know how they're going to be when they eventually split them up. And then obviously we had the Seth reign and all that stuff. But I liked seeing Reigns and Ambrose beat each other up. I thought that was kind of fun, and I wish they'd do that a little bit more.
They have a chemistry, and that's why I think, like, turning one of them, definitely Roman, and having them feud is a good idea in the future.
Mm-hmm. So that's Fastlane, folks. It, you know, went by in a blink of an eye. You blink and you miss it, pretty much.
So So then Fastlane.
This one felt like it went on forever.
I mean, again, like, results notwithstanding, I thought the main event was well wrestled, and he had some really good spots and moves in there, particularly Brock suplexing both guys at once.
That, and then them throwing him through two tables.
Yeah, and then
that I really liked. Actually.
And then the burying him in the tables. That was all really good.
Mm-hmm. Anything to shut up those Spanish announcers for me. That's fine. It's like, that's the only time WWE ever promotes the international tables.
Well, they've got the German one now there, too. So anyway.
Oh, no.
What? I realize people who don't speak English may want to watch wrestling, too. Jeez. Yeah,
true.
The two things I wanted to mention, you mentioned announcers, by the way.
Let's talk about this commentary team.
The announcing was god awful. I mean, absolutely god awful, and it made
the guy who did the pre-show was awesome, though.
And that's what I was going to get at. It made.
What do you expect with the main one where you have Byron Saxton?
It makes
on
it
the
even
main.
Worse when you've got Mauro or Mono. What the hell is it? Mauro Ranallo. There we go. Anyway, he's really good. Really good. He is very much their future. The problem is he actually calls the in-ring action and doesn't sell stuff, so Vince will never replace Cole with him because
that's the team up that you need. You need get rid of Saxton, and I know they're not going to do this, but because let's face it, SmackDown needs a voice. But if you got rid of Saxton, you had JBL, Cole, and Ranallo. On Raw, you'd have Cole doing the selling. You'd have Ranallo actually talking about the physicality of the match. You'd have JBL just spouting stupid shit, whatever he said.
I would like to have Jerry instead of JBL. Yeah.
The ideal team-up is Ranallo and Corey Graves. They would be perfect. Mm-hmm. For anyone who watches NXT, Corey Graves is a fantastic heel announcer. Yeah. And does everything.
And I do agree. I do not like WWE, basically. Shuffling King off to nowhere.
Yeah,
and
about that.
Because to me, that's what the pre-show is. The pre-show is nothing to me.
King needs to be put out to pasture.
Oh, come on.
His humor and everything else is... Man, his jokes...
JBL.
No, his jokes fall so flat. It's like watching a really bad 80s sitcom now. It's like watching an episode of Breaking Bad and then watching an episode of Growing Pains and trying to compare the plot. You're gonna have an aneurysm if you try to, like, go back to how things were.
I'm sorry, that's so good. I love it.
Yeah,
I don't know. Like, the thing about Brian Saxton, he must know enough to be in the business, but he never sells it like that. He always seems so clueless.
He's good when you pair him up.
He's so boring.
Pair him up with Graves, and he actually improves. Like, watching the NXT stuff, I find they do a pretty solid job together.
Well, maybe he just needs the right person to bounce off of.
Yeah, and I mean, part of that, too, is, like I said, I'm a big fan of Graves. I think he does a really good job of pretty much anything they ask him to do. So, I don't know.
I'm less of a fan now of JBL than I have been in quite some time. Because he just goes off on these weird friggin' tangents.
Oh, it's not,
well, he does. Yeah. He does that, and he also he's continuing this businessman bullshit. I'm sure in real life he's a businessman, just like Donald Trump and whatever the fuck else. But I'm sorry, the whole line of "you don't cross the boss" and blah blah blah.
Yeah, that's
blah,
the other
blah.
Thing I was.
The authority isn't there anymore. Well, they're there, but they're not. I mean, the authority is essentially dead at this point. You know, Stephanie's there, Vince is there, Triple H is the friggin' champion, for crap's sake, but...
He has too many lines, like Cole. Like Cole's, you know, is there any human alive who's not sick of hearing Cole say, "Vintage Orton," or...
Yeah.
I don't think he said that in a while since...
My favorite was Michael. That's what I love about JBL, just the way... It's not Michael, it's Michael. Yeah.
Michael,
like, shut up, you cowboy wearing fuck.
I mean, but to your point earlier, Ryan, Cole's gonna be around until he's ready to just leave because he sells shit.
I think Cole does have the possibility to be good though.
Yeah,
I've heard him call a few matches where he sounds genuinely really excited and really into it.
He's got
but the rest of the announced team has to be there with him.
Yeah, he's got somebody in his ear telling him to sell stuff all the time, too. I mean, it's not all his fault, I guess. And while we're on Cole, it'll bring me to my second point, and that's Daniel Bryan. And I bring up Cole with him, by the way, because I watched... first of all, Daniel Bryan's retirement was heartbreaking and one of the best moments on Raw in a while. And seriously, if you... watch that retirement speech and you can't figure out why everybody loves this guy, you're insane. You seriously need to be re-examined because I mean, he just connected with everybody instantly, and he was self-deprecating, he was funny, he had everything and everyone eating out of the palm of his hands the whole time. Like, that was a 20 some odd minute segment that went over.
Yeah,
like he went over it by 20 minutes and they just let him go, and he still could have kept talking. He did.
Well, it's kind of like when you had, you know, CM Punk doing his long segment.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, it wasn't, you know, it's almost an unfair comparison to Daniel because Daniel's was a retirement segment, but essentially it was the same kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's weird, though, because, I mean, to be blunt, Punk has more talent on the mic and personality than Bryan did. But on the opposite side of it, Bryan just connected with everyone in a way that even Punk couldn't always.
Oh, absolutely, and just, yeah.
WWE, I mean, they basically wasted the guy for quite some time and were really reluctant to push him whatsoever. And then I bring up the Cole stuff because, I mean, talk about somebody who did no favors to Bryan. Somebody who, you know, rode him down every single chance he could, and then finally... Mm-hmm. At WrestleMania when he won, was his biggest fan all of a sudden, which just, I don't know, seemed really odd. And another reason I dislike Cole so much. I don't know.
Yeah, Cole's one of those flip-floppers.
And JBL does it too, because he'll talk about how much the faces suck, and then he'll be like, oh, here's the highlight from Neville.
Yeah,
I don't know. So... I mean, Daniel Bryan retired. I wanted to mention that. I feel so selfish because, I mean, I'd love to see him again. But on the other hand, he retired for his health, which is the right thing to do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But it's heartbreaking. And all it does is underscore the current problems with Vince thinking he knows better than the fans and knows what the fans want.
I didn't expect Daniel Bryan's retirement to affect me as much as it did. Very much on a personal level, Daniel Bryan did a lot for me. When I became a fan, I remember the exact day. It was the day after Royal Rumble 2014, the day Punk walked out. And I saw Daniel Bryan perform on Raw, and that'd be the first time I'd watched Raw in my life. And I really just kind of connected with him. And at that point, I was going through a really bad bit of depression. And then watching his road to WrestleMania to fight through all the bullshit he had to do. I did miss a Raw or a SmackDown for like 3 months.
And it's funny, and it's funny because he would legitimately was, while he was fighting through, you know, bullshit on screen, he was legitimately fighting against it off screen. Because, I mean, they did not want this guy there.
Yeah, and,
and you could feel that. Like, it wasn't just the characters on the show. You could legitimately see for yourself that they truly didn't want him pushed. But, you know, they were offered, and I realize it was also written this way, but it really felt all real, and I really think it was.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that really sold me on Daniel Bryan as a person and as a performer, he seems so genuine. Like, there's just something about, there's a charisma that comes along every so often in professional sports. People get it. John Cena has it, because look at all the charity work he does. When John Cena talks to you, you believe what he says. When Daniel Bryan talks to you, you believe what he says. And it was just something just so incredible, just incredible about him as a person. Then watching his win at WrestleMania 30, the last time I remember cheering for an event that was a sport would probably when the Blue Jays won the World Series back in the 90s.
And to be fair, this one's predetermined.
Yeah. But yeah, it was, but this one, it felt like the little guy won.
Yep.
It felt so good. And then watching him go through all the troubles that he went through, it really just kind of hit home. And he performed in Toronto last February at a house show. I couldn't go because that's when Dr. Wiley got sick and started having seizures, so I had to sell my ticket to my friend Josh. And I love my cat, but I'm always going to kind of be sad that I missed Daniel Bryan perform once live. But when he came out and gave that speech, that 20 minutes, that's the longest I think Raw's ever gone over on the USA Network up here in Canada. It's on, like, Sportsnet. I legitimately cried. I never thought pro wrestling would make me cry. That was something so unexpected.
And it's weird because they're trying to recreate that with Roman. They're trying to give this feeling that it's against all odds, but it's so obviously fake. I mean, that's one of the reasons I think that it's frustrating him so much, is he can see that, and he knows that the audience knows it's all fake, that, you know, realistically they want him to be the champion. And it also just underscores how special Daniel Bryan was, that he had this storyline. And, you know, near the end, they finally did decide, like, okay, you know what, we're going to give this guy the belt and the title. And it still didn't feel fake. There was still something legitimate and a, you know, an honesty about it. And that's all on Bryan. That's all him. So,
yeah. Okay, so really quick before we get out of here, because I have to eventually get on over to Pixels in the Animation, where Neil and I are going over more Street Fighter. Ugh.
Yeah, that's such a terrible cartoon. I feel sorry for you.
Mortal Kombat was worse, but...
Oh, fuck you, it was, man. At least Mortal Kombat introduced Quan Chi.
Yeah, but at least Mortal Kombat... I think Mortal Kombat didn't last as long.
No, Mortal Kombat was only one 13 season...
13 episodes.
One season, 13 yeah. episodes with
and Luke Perry is Sub-Zero, come on!
Ugh.
That's the worst voice acting I've ever heard in my entire life.
Oh, there's been worse. Anyway.
Okay, so before we get out of here, I was trying to look up some stuff for the WrestleMania card, and I saw an article on Forbes.com about predictions of what's going to happen. Are they, because I have not been able to, like I said earlier, I didn't get my Hulu subscription this month, so I have missed all of SmackDown and all of Raw for February. Are they really going to do Shane O'Mac versus Undertaker? Seriously? Come on, people.
That's the big question. I'm wondering if it's not a big sort of fake out and Shane gets to the... First of all, I mean, I'll mention that the Raw after Fastlane was fantastic for the most part. But anyway, yeah, they had Shane claim that, you know, he's got some stuff on Vince and Shane wants control of Raw. So he gets one match to take control of Raw. Vince sets it at WrestleMania versus Undertaker in Hell in a Cell. My question is going to be, will Shane, you know, will they get out there and Shane goes, oh, by the way, there's another stipulation. I get to pick somebody to fight for me. And then they bring out, say, you know, Cena returning, Rollins, maybe even Cesaro. I know those are doubtful, but maybe he picks somebody who is healthy on the roster or something. Maybe he picks Owens. Maybe Sting is healthy enough to go finally. And we finally get Sting Undertaker. I think
I know who it's going to be. Zack Ryder.
Yeah.
No, Mojo, it will never be Zack Ryder.
Mojo Rawley and Zack Ryder. No, I mean... I think there's plenty of possibilities. If it's Shane, I'm not sure. And I listened to Austin talk about this because he was excited by it. I just don't think Shane, who's not a wrestler, can carry. And I, as much as I hate to say it, The Undertaker's smart, but he's in his 50s and he needs to be carried in a match at this point. I don't think Shane can do that and make an entertaining match anymore.
Well, and that's the thing. Like you said, Shane is not a wrestler. The Undertaker needs someone... Like we've already said, a Cena or a Stone Cold or something, someone to be able to help him through the match. And if it is Undertaker versus Shane O'Mac, all as I can come in and say is that if it does happen, Undertaker's going to go in there, he's going to tombstone the poor guy, and the match will be over in 5 fucking seconds.
No, I mean, what they would have is, you know, Shane uses weapons. And remember, Shane's not a horrible wrestler. It's just he hasn't...
I'm not saying he is.
It's just he hasn't done this in 7 years is one of the problems.
He hasn't done it in 7 years, and he's getting up there in age. He's not the young kid he used to be back in late 90s.
Which is another reason I think this is all a big... I know they've shown training videos of Shane. I think it's all just a big angle, and somebody's going to fight for him. And I'm hoping it's... a Sting, or, you know, maybe they want to develop some more new stars, so maybe they bring in Owens, or I don't know. So I think, yeah, it's on the card. I just don't know how likely it is.
Who else is on WrestleMania?
Ambrose Brock, which I think is terrific. That's a smart one, because both guys are going to come out of it looking like gold. Mm-hmm. Like, Ambrose is going to lose, let's be honest, more than likely. Although, I mean, I could see him winning. But either way, both guys, I think, end up looking good. And that's it's a street fight, which I think plays to both of their strengths, too.
Well, yeah.
I think that's going to be a terrific match. That is a smart pick. Then we've got the world title match, which I already alluded to. You know what? If they turn Reigns heel at the end of the match, I think that's going to be fantastic.
But if they keep him going down the path he's going...
That's a terrible idea, yeah. Because there's so many problems with this. One is Hunter is so much more popular. Again, you didn't watch the Raw after Fastlane. O'Cole's notes it. Hunter attacks Reigns, completely bloodies him, like mauls him and everything else. And the whole point of the segment is the fans are supposed to feel bad for Reigns and, you know, boo Hunter for attacking him and beating him and everything else.
And they didn't. They probably cheered him.
They cheered Hunter, and then they started a yes chant when he was slamming his head into the table. And then Hunter pedigrees him onto the stairs, which completely bloodies Reigns in, by the way, one of the worst blood spots in a while, because you saw Byron Saxton pass the guy a blood pack. Anyway.
What? Oh,
wait, what?
Yeah, you could see
Saxton. I need to see this.
Saxton passes him like the... thing. So anyway, you know, he gets pedigreed on the stairs, and the fans start chanting one more time and thank you, Hunter. If that's your main face and he's that hated, you need to turn him, because the match is going to be a mess. Because people who don't watch wrestling watch WrestleMania. It's watched by millions more people than Raw and everything else. People are going to tune in and go, you know, why is Vince McMahon, you know, why are they making this guy who's obviously not popular at all seem like the good guy, and the bad guy who's using weapons and a sledgehammer and cheating, why is everyone cheering him? Because it's going to make Vince look old and out of touch with his audience.
I just wish that they would actually do something with Hunter. Pick a plot line for him. Like, either he's going to be the COO and stay out of the ring, or he's going to be back in the ring again.
I want Shane to win the Undertaker match because I'm so sick of the evil boss. We've seen that since 2002 now.
Yeah.
Like, there's been an evil boss, you know, for over a decade now.
I miss Teddy Long. I really do. That was probably the one bright spot of SmackDown back in the day.
Or even better yet, maybe just don't even have a GM. Like, why do you really need one?
Just bring back the anonymous GM to the computer.
For the love of God.
It's a laptop, Jim.
No, don't do that. Just say, you know what, here are tonight's matches.
You know what, though? I know I'm in the minority. I miss Vicky Guerrero.
Oh, you are not in the minority.
Really? I thought people hated her.
No, if you do, they did, but they're supposed to. Like, I still remember when she left. Like, people absolutely loved her. And then when she's on Austin or Jericho's podcast, they always talk about how much she's missed. And she gets ridiculous amounts of fan mail and everything else. Like,
yeah,
she was
a lot of fun.
She was so good at her character, you did hate her. Like, even I disliked her. And in the back of my head, I was going, she's doing such a good job that I hate the hater and I want her off TV, but I know that's what she's supposed to be doing. Like, no, she was good. And, yeah, if they're going to do the evil boss, at least have somebody who's consistent, which she was. The problem with Steph and Hunter is they do all this charity work, or Hunter goes to NXT and is the, you know, lovable, fun boss, and then he's supposed to be this evil prick. It doesn't mesh. And then Steph goes out, you know, she'll do a ton of charity work and do the Be a Star and meet with kids, and then she comes out and is supposed to be evil. And all that stuff, by the way, doesn't help Reigns. He's the one that suffered from a lot of it.
Yep, pretty much.
And I don't think I think he does some Make-A-Wish stuff, but not as much as Titus O'Neil or John Cena or anything like that.
No one in WWE doesn't as much Make-A-Wish stuff as John Cena. No one does.
But Titus is doing all, like, he's starting to catch up. Like, he does a lot of good.
What's not Make-A-Wish that he does? He does a lot of, like, he does a lot of good things, like help out the homeless and stuff on his days off. And, you know,
this is something we should probably talk about.
And then touch Vince McMahon and get suspended. You know, stuff like that is what Titus does.
And that's terrible too, because Titus was really he doesn't have a whole lot of time left, and he was starting to get a bit of a push, and then
It's nice that they thought about canning him in Black History Month. That would have gone over really well. Like, basically
like
one of their only stars, and they considered firing him.
But so he's one of their only black stars that's really going. So I guess you could say the kind of New Day, which
there's
that.
End on
that. Have you thought of three reasons why they suck?
they just do.
There's your argument, folks. They just do.
That's right. They just do. All right. Next time will be WrestleMania 32.
And I'll give you my breakdown of the network special from Toronto.
We should seriously consider doing we'll see if anybody wants it. Brad, I'm looking at you. I want your feedback. But anyway, depending on what people want, we could do a quick prediction show before WrestleMania, just a brief one.
All right.
Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah, nothing like an hour or 2 hours long, just a quick one to talk about it and
like
see if there's anything.
20 minutes or anything.
See if there's anything we're looking forward to aside from Dean Brock. I like how nobody else has a feud. I mean, it's rumored that it's going to be there was a draw tonight in a number one contenders match, so I think it's assured that it's going to be Charlotte, Becky, Sasha in a three-way championship.
That would be awesome!
I hate.
Okay, we're going to end on that.
I hate both of you.
Folks.
Authority! A select few have it. The rest of you bow down to it. Now, I admit it. All of you have an authority figure in your life that you have to listen to. An authority figure that tells you what to do, where to go, how to think, how to dress. And every single one of you hate it. You hate it. You want to do something about it. You want to stand up. You want to speak out. You want to challenge that authority. But you do not. You don't, because you are afraid. Now,
That fear is not a bad thing. That fear is what keeps things in place. That fear is what nature provides you, that fear, let's just say, so that you will all know your place in life. Roman Reigns should have known and listened to that fear. Roman Reigns should have known his place, but he didn't. Roman chose to challenge authority, to disrespect authority. Roman chose to challenge me, disrespect me. Roman Reigns should know his place. You do not challenge authority. That is a lesson to everyone that can hear my voice. No one.
Talk about disrespect. What in the hell is this nutcase doing out here?
Hey, before we get started out here, I just want to let you know, I just got off the phone with Roman Reigns. And first of all, he says hi. And second of all, you want me to tell you that he's coming for you? I figured you'd know what that meant. I mean, that's y'all's deal, so.
Ladies and gentlemen, fresh off his win last night at the Oscars for Best Supporting Actor in a Bromance, Dean Ambrose.
You're real smart. You're the cerebral assassin. And you're smart enough to know that you never, ever want to get in the ring with a guy like me. You're smart enough to know that you can't beat me. And you've known that for a long time. Yeah. I can see it all over you. I can see it in your face. I can see it in your body. I can read you like a book, son, hell. I can smell it on you. You don't think you can beat me. So how about some action from the COO, huh? How about me versus you? How about me versus you for that? And my brother Roman Reigns won the right to fight for the WWE World Heavyweight Championship at WrestleMania, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be the champion on April 3rd now, does it? So let's find out if I'm just talking crazy. And let's find out right now.
I'm the authority around here. Your thoughts, your ideas, they mean nothing. Although, I must admit that this intrigues me somewhat. So I'll do what I always do. I will take it under advisement. I will see if it is best for business. And I promise you this, Dean, I'll think about it. And I'll give you an answer by the end of the night.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you, with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer, that's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Technology Truths, brought to you by GEICO.
Technology!
Bloody truths.
Truth. Teenagers can communicate entirely in emojis.
How was the birthday party? Pizza slice, kitten, soccer ball, pineapple?
Truth. It's so easy to switch and save on car insurance at Geico.com.
What are you talking about? Paperclip, shoulder shrug, high five, wizard hat? What?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.